Welcome back to Fear or Favour. Well, today we have a guest joining us. I'll introduce him very shortly. This podcast, we're going to dedicate totally to the issue of the post office. Let me just give you a very quick background. So more than 700 branch managers were given criminal convictions when a faulty accounting software system made it look as though money was missing from their sites. Between 2000 and 2014, the post office prosecuted 736 sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses. On average, that's one a week. And that's all in relation to a computer system that was called Horizon. Some of those resulted in getting convictions for false accounting and theft. And you can imagine, it ruined their lives, many of them financially, but also they were shunned by their community. Marriages broke down and courts heard details of how families' health had deteriorated, even to the degree that some of those people ended up dying. Well, we're joined today by Nick Wallace. Nick, I've known you for a very long time. Go back to your days at BBC Surrey. And I think the work you've done, and both Nazir and I have talked about this, has been absolutely sterling. And you know, I pay credit to you. And I think Nazir would say the same.
Well, absolutely astonishing, Nick. I mean, I've dealt with miscarriage of justice in the past, the Bang of Six, Guildford Four. But you've got the post office 736. I mean, and that's just probably the tip of the iceberg still, isn't it? So the work that you've done has been exemplary, and but it's a terrible shame that you had to do it. But I mean, the reality is that had it not been for the work you've done in exposing this scandal, many, many people would, well, as the lives have been ruined already, but many more would have continued to be ruined.
Well, you're very kind. I mean, obviously it's the campaigners who are at the heart of all this. And I always say that I just reported it. So I was just doing my job. And it was 12 years ago when I was working at BBC Surrey. Either it's, you know, it must have been just before I met you, Mark, or just after the story landed in my lap when a taxi driver told me that his pregnant wife had been thrown in prison for a crime she didn't commit. Now, to any journalist, let alone a local radio journalist, that sounded like a big story. So I've just taken an interest in it ever since.
I think the difference here is that, you know, the other miscarriages I mentioned, they were crimes that did exist and people were wrongly convicted. You've got a case, well, these cases are crimes that didn't even happen.
Well, that was something that John Sweeney said at the end of the first Panorama that we did. Was there even a crime here? And when we put out that Panorama, we were under severe pressure from the post office, who were going through their crazy denialist phase, having decided that they were going to cover up the truth. And they were very busy trying to persuade anyone who would listen that any journalist taking an interest in this story had simply got the wrong end of the stick and that all these 700 people were criminals. But in those days, we didn't even know the scale of it. We thought there might have been two or three dozen convictions. We thought there might have been a couple of hundred more people who'd lost their jobs unfairly. We had no idea of the scale of this until.
And the numbers are massive. The numbers are massive, yeah, in terms of scale of miscarriages of justice. For our viewers, let's go back to the very beginning. So let's just set out, how does the structure work in relation to post office submasters? And how does it work in relation to the computer system that had only recently been installed?
Well, the sub-postmaster's contract is a old document which predates Horizon, and what it does is it says that any losses that come to light in a sub-postmaster's branch, unless they are caused through carelessness, negligence or error, must be made good by the sub-postmaster. Now, when Horizon came in 1999-2000, until that point, sub-postmasters, who were agents of the post office, small businesses who took responsibility for the public money that was coming into their branches, they would do paper accounts. So they would have a huge paper spreadsheet, which would have columns for all the hundreds of products that the post office either dispensed or sold. And the postmaster would take in money at the beginning of a week from a cash center. That money would either be paid out over the counter in terms of pensions and benefits, or they would receive money from businesses and from purchases of stamps, etc. They'd all be totted up on a spreadsheet, paper spreadsheet, folded up and sent to the post office financial HQ in Chesterfield. When Horizon came in, which was a system designed and built and operated by a company called Fujitsu on a £1 billion PFI deal, they automated the accounting provision within each branch. So the electronic point of sale, i.e. the glorified till, which was the front end of the Horizon terminal, was connected to the branch accounts, which was connected to a back end at Post Office HQ. When this system was rolled out, it was described as the largest non-military IT system in Europe. 20,000 post office branches got this IT system. And what it did fundamentally was take control of the accounting function for each branch out of the possession of an individual sub-postmaster and put it in the sphere of influence of the post office and Fujitsu. So a postmaster was legally responsible for accounting for the money that came in and out of his or her branch, but they were no longer in control of that function. The other fundamental problem was that the Horizon system didn't work. It was badly written. It had wasted £500 million of public money before it was even rolled out, according to a National Audit Office report in 2000. And it was, in the words of a developer who worked on it to try and troubleshoot it before it went live, it was a prototype that should never have been kicked out of the front door into the live estate.
Just on that, Nick, I mean, I've been party to a number of rollouts of IT programs in government for the last 20, 30 years. They generally go through a process of piloting, analysis taking place before they, and sometimes they'll pull the plug if it doesn't doesn't do what it's meant to do. Clearly didn't happen here. They simply, having committed the money they had done, they simply went for it.
There was a political imperative. The post office had essentially bet the farm on the automation of the network, and it could not fail. Fujitsu were trying very, very hard to get it to work in the months before rollout. But in the July before it started being rolled out in November 1999, there were lists. We've got documents showing a list of severe critical problems, one of which directly related to the cash account, which even Fujitsu did not know at that time how to solve. In September 1999, the board of the post office refused to sign off the Horizon system as being fit to roll out. And yet by November, it was being rolled out. And the document...
How?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask that question. Mm. The board has said no.
How?
And then it still rolls out.
By November 1999, the board had obviously received an assurance or enough assurances that this could then happen. And we have not seen the document that changed their mind. What we do have is a series of documents showing a litany of really serious errors directly relating to the cash account, which is at the center of the branch accounts of each part of the Horizon system, not working. And the development manager that I spoke to said it never worked. And it went out into the system not working, which is why mysterious holes kept appearing in sub-postmasters' accounts. And then if we go back to the contract, because they were liable for any discrepancies in their branch accounts, if they could not prove to the post office that it wasn't by their carelessness, negligence or error, the post office would hold them liable for the gaps in their accounts.
Again, I mean, the more you hear of this, the more bewildering it becomes. At some point, the post office would have been aware that they have a serious organized crime gang working in their post offices, given the amount of money that's disappearing up and down the country. Were they? I mean, obviously, we know. I think what we need to say is that there is a public inquiry going on right now in relation to this matter. Some of these questions hopefully will be answered, but from your research and your investigations, where was this red flag that should have been waved left, right and center?
The problem with the way the post office viewed its sub-postmasters was a serious cultural problem. People who worked for the post office saw themselves as guardians of the public cash, and they saw sub-postmasters as, and this is a Victorian view that never really changed, jumped up social climbers, shopkeepers, lower middle class sorts who were looking to confer social respectability upon themselves by taking on a post office branch, by being imbued with the credibility that a 300-year-old brand like the post office would have. And so they were seen by post office central workers, essentially, as a threat, as potential thieves. And the glorious thing about Horizon was that it shone a light, it opened a window onto all this thieving that was going on within the post office network. So when the number of prosecutions quadrupled in the period before and after Horizon's arrival, the post office didn't see this as a problem. They didn't see this as something that might relate to the Horizon system itself. They saw Horizon as being the solution to the problem of money going missing within the post office network.
Nick, just go back to the beginning. So prior to Horizon coming in, and you might not know the answer to this, but what was the scale of frauds and thefts taking place within Postmasters? So what was the average that was taking place over a year? And I asked that because, of course, there was an exponential rise, wasn't there?
Yeah, it quadrupled. So we took a snapshot of the figures, which were the only ones the post office were able to give us when I put in a Freedom of Information request, I think back in 2020. And by that stage, they'd started this enormous process of reviewing 4.5 million documents in the light of the High Court litigation conclusion. And at that stage, the numbers that they had showed that there were around 5 to 10 prosecutions for fraud, theft and false accounting any given year in the run-up to Horizon being rolled out. And then it went to an average of around 50 thereafter. But my point has always been, even if all of these people were guilty of a criminal offence, what does this say to you about your business processes that is criminalising hitherto absolutely spotless people in terms of reputation who have never had a criminal conviction in their lives? What is it about the post office business systems process and culture that is turning people to crime on an industrial scale? But and the answer is, of course, it wasn't. It was a fault in the IT system.
But Nick, what is it that changed? Anyone that says, okay, so we've now got roughly five, ten a year, now we're going to jump up to 50. Surely somebody within the post office, and we can talk a little bit in terms of how that prosecution system works. Surely somebody must have said, what is it that's giving rise to this massive increase? Did they just simply say, well, it's obviously we've got a very good computer system now that's finding it. But nobody then identifying that actually is it.
But also, Nick, I mean, as Nick just said a moment ago, they had a very low opinion of Postmasters.
Yeah, and, it's a toxic
And I think they were probably thinking, aha, we've got them now. This new system is actually finding out who our criminals are.
And don't forget that the post office didn't operate the Fujitsu system. Fujitsu did. So you had a environment where people within the post office who knew next to nothing about IT believed in the infallibility of computers. I mean, don't forget, 22 years ago, we're told that computers are like calculators. You put 2 plus 2 in and you get 4 out every single time. Mm. No one had some kind of understanding that these sprawling IT ecosystems, which had software written by human beings, which were potentially able to drop out due to communications faults, which had bad training for the users at the other end, could generate errors in all sorts of areas, even if it did work perfectly. And so this belief in the infallibility of the Horizon IT system, this innate suspicion of sub-postmasters, meant that the post office culturally was just able to say to itself, aha, we've got them now, let's start weeding them out.
Nick, talk us through how that prosecution system works. Obviously, you know, Dizier, ex-CPS prosecutor, but they're not joined up, are they?
No, these were post office prosecutions, so they have their own prosecution division.
Yeah. And what it meant was that there were no checks and balances on what was going on. If your investigators can bypass the police and your prosecutors can bypass the CPS, then you can be the victim of a crime, the investigator of that crime and the prosecutor of that crime before any external agency has had a chance to see what's going on. And the justice system was simply not keeping count. They weren't looking at how many people the post office was prosecuting. The government wasn't doing it. The Ministry of Justice wasn't doing it. And the business department, which owns the post office, wasn't keeping a tally. These were all happening, of course, in all the different courts all around the UK, who themselves weren't keeping a tally. So no one could see the scale of what was going on whilst it was happening. So no one externally was able to raise their hand and say, hang on a minute.
And I think that's such an important part, Nazir, isn't it? You know, in terms of Crown Prosecution Service and the police, you know, those checks and balances are there for a very good reason.
And they were created because of miscarriage of justice. Nick's absolutely right. Because there was no second look at police investigations prior to 1986, cases were just being prosecuted by the police without that sort of independent verification or scrutiny. And the post office were continuing with a system that we knew back in 86 the Royal Commission knew in 86 was not fit for purpose. Strange as it may sound, I mean, I remember going into courtrooms when I was in role, and there would always be a the way it works is you have a remand court, and you have a where people are brought in overnight. You'd have another court, which is for trial court. And now and again, you'd get private prosecutors coming along, taking over their own court. And so pretty much every month, you would have a post office court. I never paid any attention to it because it wasn't mine, you know. But, I massively regret that, Nick. I wish I'd walked in on one of these back in the early 2000s, because I'm pretty sure I would have seen what you've seen. But we just simply ignored them because they were not the state's prosecution service. They were the post office's prosecution.
So, Nick, when does the flag go up? At what point does somebody within the post office structure goes, we've got a problem?
Well, in 2009, Computer Weekly published its seminal investigation into the Horizon system using 7 case studies. It didn't have any evidence that the computer system wasn't working properly, but it had 7 very credible, hitherto blameless people who'd been either prosecuted or sacked as a result of an IT error within their branches. That led to the creation of the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance, who in late 2009 encouraged its members to start writing to their MPs. By 2010, after the general election, there was an awareness amongst MPs that there seemed to be a serious number of people contacting them saying, look, we've got problems which have really shattered our lives, really caused terrible, terrible suffering, both in terms of sort of financial prospects and in terms of mental health and in terms of what it did to their reputations. So led by James R. Buthnot, the MP for North East Hampshire, the MPs got together and they approached the post office and said, look, we think you've got a problem. Now, the post office was obviously aware of the media reports and was obviously being questioned by MPs. And in 2010, Rod Ismay, who was a post office employee, put together a report which only came out in the Court of Appeal in late 2020. And the Ismay report looked at the criticism of the Horizon system. It said it had spoken to Fujitsu, who said there was no problem. It said that if we were to do an independent investigation of our own IT system, let us be crystal clear, this was his exact phrase, that this would involve telling the courts, stopping all prosecutions, and possibly contacting the Court of Appeal to see if there were any miscarriages of justice. And the conclusion to the report was that we would only be doing this for the comfort of others because we are absolutely certain in the efficacy of our IT system. Now, that report went to everyone at the top level of the post office, general counsel, head of security, head of civil and criminal law at the post office, and the then managing director. Now, my view has always been that if I, as a managing director, and that report landed on my desk, if I thought there was the faintest sniff of a possibility that we may have prosecuted one innocent person, then I would want that independent report commissioned immediately and pull up the floorboards to uncover it. But they decided to do nothing. It was only when the pressure increased to the extent that an independent investigator was sent in 2012 called Second Sight, and they reported in the middle of 2013 that there were 2 errors within Horizon.
Just 2?
Well, that was the only 2 that were reported at the time. Right. They were volunteered by Fujitsu's chief Horizon architect. The criminal barrister who was prosecuting for the post office, his name was Simon Clark, immediately stopped all prosecutions and said, we need to do a complete review of everything. That instigated the cessation of all post office prosecutions and a secret review, which was kept entirely separate from the Second Sight investigation and the MPs and the campaigners. And that secret review, which was very limited in scope, uncovered a series of unsafe prosecutions.
Commissioned by the post office?
Commissioned by the post office. And what happened was that the post office covered it up. And the head of security at the time, John Scott, this came out in the Court of Appeal in 2021. In 2013, the head of security, John Scott, ordered the shredding of documents in relation to problems with the Horizon IT system that were being generated at the time. And the post office then from 2013 to 2019 went into, as I said, their denial phase, where having covered up this scandal and the probability that they had prosecuted a number of innocent people, they went into this complete denial phase where they hoped that they would be able to keep a lid on this until it all came out in the High Court in 2019.
So you have a report that says that there's a flaw here. There's a major, major issue with this system. Internally within the post office, they cover it up. They then start shredding. I mean, is it? We probably can't talk specifically about this individual, but that strikes me as worthy of an investigation in relation to obstructing justice, perverting the course of justice.
Yeah, absolutely. As I understand it, Nick, you probably know better than didn't the High Court judge say that matters were going to be referred to the DPP as a result of their findings?
Yeah, at the end of the High Court litigation in December 2019, Mr. Justice Fraser effectively closed the book on the litigation and then announced, I have been so concerned. I have such grave concerns as to the veracity of evidence provided by a number of Fujitsu employees with regard to previous prosecutions in civil and criminal cases that I'm referring a confidential file to the DPP. The DPP passed it to the Met in January 2020, and the Met have been investigating ever since. All that we know about it is that they've got, I think, six people working on this now full time, and to date, only two people have been questioned under caution.
And those two people?
We I didn't name them in my book. They were revealed very briefly at the Court of Appeal last year, but they are Fujitsu engineers. They are not post office people.
Okay.
We believe them to be Fujitsu engineers.
No, I just, all I can say is that the moment you mention the Met Police are engaged, Mark and I have been talking about the Met Police's dilatory nature when it comes to investigating serious matters in previous podcasts. My heart sank a little bit, actually, when you said that. It's the kind of thing, to be frank, the kind of thing the National Crime Agency should be involved in. We're talking about potentially, I mean, allegedly, an international company. We're talking about senior government figures, senior post office figures, potentially others within this legal system. All of them will have had some insight in relation to this matter, and all of which might, as Mark said, end up in prosecutions or potentially prosecutions of perverting the course of justice, which are extremely serious offences. So I hope, Nick, you're keeping track on the Met's investigation, and by all means, keep coming back to me and Mark, because we'd like to keep track on it too. The other issue that we've only just skimmed it, the victims, because I listened to some of their stories before this podcast, and you can't help but share their devastation at the lives that have been destroyed by this. I mean, you obviously heard them firsthand. These are people who are just doing their job, earning a good penny, keeping their families safe and secure, who were then dragged into a system that destroyed them.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stories are horrendous. They're heartbreaking, and you wouldn't wish anything like that to happen, because it's not just that they were centers of the community. They were respectable people who liked being visible, who liked being serving the community through the job that they did. They were also, because of their visibility, when they were summarily suspended from their position and told not to speak to anyone, and because they were so isolated, because don't forget, of course, there's only one job of a sub-postmaster in any given community, because that's the nature of the way the post office network works. So this respectable, I think it's an actually official position, a sub-postmaster, so you're sort of some kind of vague officer of the state, to then suddenly be removed from your post office and then sacked and then charged with a criminal offence. The mental health implications for very, very proud people, who most of whom just about scraped by running a post office. There were some good post offices in good times that could make good money, but really, you know, they were there to help. And then the organization which gave them a lot of their credibility, the post office, was now pointing the finger at them and saying, no, you're a thief. You had your fingers in the till. You were covering up holes in your accounts.
Wasn't there a postmaster's union or something?
Now this is the biggest can of worms of all. The National Federation of Sub-Postmasters bought into the Horizon project wholesale. Because of the government's desire to start putting benefits into people's accounts directly, the post office was facing a drop in footfall as the number of people coming to collect benefits would obviously reduce. So the Horizon IT system was going to be the manner through which branches were kept viable. Don't forget, of course, each individual sub-postmaster runs their own business. They make a profit from doing well. They buy their businesses, they invest in those businesses, and they look to retain the value in those businesses in order to sell them on. So the IT network was going to start generating more income for sub-postmasters by partnering with other businesses such as banks, electricity companies, insurance companies, foreign exchange companies, who would all bolt their IT systems onto the Horizon system and generate more income for those customers who did come into the branch. If any of those partner organizations got the slightest whiff there might be something wrong with the Horizon IT system, they would not be putting business the post office's way. So the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters took a policy decision that it would never criticize the Horizon system, even when its members were screaming out in pain because they were being sacked and prosecuted over errors that they couldn't explain, over an IT system which they didn't understand and didn't have the tools to interrogate properly. The NFSP, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters, decided that it was better to throw a few individuals under the bus in order to protect the interests of the whole.
That's absolutely shocking. I'm aghast at that. I mean, at the very organisation, you have unions there because they're meant to protect their members.
It's their sole purpose.
From the organisation, the big cloud organisation. Yet they didn't. They sided with the organisation.
Because they were incentivized.
Incentivized and threw their members under the bus.
To side with the organisation.
I think, you know, I realise that the NFSP didn't prosecute people, that was the post office. But in terms of culpability for this scandal, your one job is to protect your membership.
Yeah.
And yet you hear stories time and time again of NFSP reps who were seen to be incredibly matey with their post office counterparts, telling their postmasters, oh, well, you better get the money together quick just to pay it back because otherwise you're going to get prosecuted. It's not the IT system, mate. It must be your staff. Look the other way.
Can we move forward to now? Because, I mean, Mark and I are always keen on is accountability or the lack of. As I said earlier on, there's a public inquiry going on. There has been the High Court hearing. There's a compensation being paid. I saw some message from the current CEO of the Post Office saying how sorry they all were. How they were going to put it right, etc. I don't know how you put right somebody has going to prison for X number of years and having their lives destroyed. But anyway, what people will be asking is why has nobody been held to account for this, other than the people who are wrongly convicted?
Yeah, I think the inquiry will go some way towards picking that apart. We're currently at the human impact stage. So this week, the inquiry has been in Cardiff, talking to victims in Wales. Next week, it goes to Leeds. Then it comes back to London. Then by Easter, that phase of the inquiry should have wrapped up. So Wynne Williams, who's the retired judge, who is the independent chair of the inquiry, will then do a bit of reading in. And then in June, the phase one of the inquiry, which actually looks at accountability, will start picking apart the commissioning of the Horizon system. And then over a period of phases, it will get up to what Paula Venables and the like knew in 2013 when the independent...
What have they said? What have the former CEO and others who are implicated in this, what have they said up to now about their involvement?
The only on the record information that exists from Paula Venables, who was the CEO from 2012 until 2019, was an appearance before the Select Committee in 2015, in which she denied there had been any miscarriages of justice, saying it would have been really important that we brought these to light had any surfaced. And a letter which she wrote in response to a query from the chairman of the Bayes Select Committee in 2020, in which she essentially, and I'm cut down a 6-page letter to a paraphrase, said nothing was her fault, everything was Fujitsu's fault, and that she was acting under legal advice at all times. She will eventually be forced to give evidence under oath at the inquiry, as will many other executives, many other civil servants, because don't forget the post office is 100% owned by the government. Mm-hmm. The Postal Services Minister, Joe Swinson, between 2012 and 2015, has so far refused or to even acknowledge any requests for interviews about what she knew at the time. So, and also Fujitsu will be required to stand in the dock and give their perspective. What I expect will happen is that Fujitsu will point the finger at the post office and the post office will point the finger at Fujitsu, and the government will deny all knowledge of what was going on at any given time. Unless the inquiry can get its hands on documents which show that the level of communication between the post office, Fujitsu and the government, it's going to be quite tricky unpicking who knew what when. But I'll give you a scenario whereby every executive can get away with a clean pair of heels. 2013, Simon Clark says, what? There are errors in Horizon that we weren't previously aware of. This casts doubts on all our previous prosecutions. We need to do an investigation now. The investigation begins. Brian Altman, QC, is brought in October 2013 to set up a test whereby every prosecution, once it's reviewed, will then either meet or pass the test by which the prosecuted sub-postmasters will either be informed that they potentially have suffered a miscarriage of justice and may like to go to the Court of Appeal. This was set up, obviously, at the instigation of the Post Office Board. As a result, the Post Office Board say, we were presented with a legal problem. We went to legal counsel, the highest legal counsel in the land, and we set up a structure by which we could do what our legal duty was. The lawyers say, the post office came to us with a problem. We provided a legal solution for that problem. And therefore, we all acted in good faith at all times. We're terribly, terribly sorry we got things wrong, but we didn't mean to.
So how come that lawyers stood by all of that then? So his assessment was wrong.
Yeah, and what we don't know is the exact advice and the exact test that Brian Altman gave to the post office in 2013, because they have refused point blank, despite several requests from me, to hand it over. But it was very interesting to see Brian Altman QC acting for the post office in the Court of Appeal in 2020 and 2021, during which his advice and his involvement back in 2013 was never revealed to the judges.
Well, I know Brian Altman. I knew him, actually, when obviously I instructed him on occasions for very serious cases. But from what you just said, Nick, it probably was inappropriate for him to act.
I believe several senior lawyers have suggested that that is the case.
Yeah. If you were a witness in your own case, you can't advocate those cases. But obviously, as I said, that will come out in due course. All I can say, Nick, is that we are, again, as I say, I feel really, really torn in a sense that, and we know a system that works. A system of independent checks and balances should have been in place, and people should ultimately be held to account for their failures. That's what we want. We need to recognize the pain and suffering of those who have been so poorly treated by this, and their families as well, and the communities. Small communities undoubtedly will have been impacted in really massive ways here. But I just like you, I want, and just like them, I want somebody to finally be held to account for the fact that this happened, that it was potentially covered up. And they doubled up. They doubled down on their cover-up. They continued to pursue the lie, in effect, that everything was fine when we all know it wasn't.
Nick, who do you think, give me a list of those people who you think still have questions to answer and haven't answered.
Starting at the top, I would say Joe Swinson. I mean, Vince Cable has given an interview. He was the business secretary during the period where the post office became aware it may have been responsible for miscarriages of justice, and he claims not to have had any significant conversation about that at all. Joe Swinson, however, attended Parliament, a parliamentary debate in December 2014, during which she was told unequivocally that the post office had been duplicitous, was acting in bad faith, and was attempting to sabotage its own schemes for redress for sub-postmasters at the time. Shortly after Joe Swinson made that statement, there was the Bayes Select Committee hearing, during which Paula Venables told the Select Committee that no miscarriages of justice had been surfaced. And shortly after that, the independent investigators, Second Sight, which Joe Swinson had made a big fuss about doing a good job, were sacked by the post office, probably with collusion of the government. If the post office did it without collusion of the government, then the post office board has serious questions to answer. So you've got Vince Cable, Joe Swinson, you've got the former chief executive of the Post Office, Paula Venables. You've got the head of security, John Scott, who ordered the shredding of documents. You've got the general counsel of the Post Office, who disappeared in mysterious circumstances in late 2013, shortly after the shredding memo came to light, Susan Crichton. You've also got, I'd like to see what Brian Altman has to say about the advice that he gave in 2013, because the Post Office has now agreed to waive privilege on most or all relevant documents relating to the scandal. And the investigators, the people who went into Post Office branches, their names keep coming up in the inquiry. People like Mike Wilcox, John Longman, who went in essentially and failed to do a proper investigation of what was actually happening in the branch. If, as all the evidence has pointed towards, and which I have on the record from two named sources, that Post Office investigators were not trained or told to look into the possibility of IT error when there was a problem in their branches, then they're simply not up to scratch as investigators. They're not doing a proper job. Yeah. And so I think the cancer ran right through the Post Office. And then you've also got the people at Fujitsu who were busy telling the Post Office there was nothing to see here, there was nothing wrong with their computer system, it was all providing a brilliant service, and that there were not any... The Post Office's case going into the High Court litigation was that there was not a single case where a Post Office employee, as in a sub-postmaster, had been held liable for an IT error in their branch. Every error that had ever existed within the Horizon system had been caught and fixed and made good at the postmaster's end before any were held liable. And that is a lie. And that was blown open over the course of the litigation. The fact that they were still holding that position in 2019 is shocking. Yeah.
How confident are you that, I mean, Nazir and I, we talk about this every week. It's about holding people to account. How confident are you that eventually someone will be held to account, or a number of people will be held to account?
I've heard nothing but good things about Sir Wynne Williams. He comes across, he's not like Mr. Justice Fraser, who has the nickname the Iron Judge, because he's an ex-Royal Marine and he does Ironman triathlons in his spare time, and he commands the court with the military position that you'd expect. Sir Wynne Williams comes across as a kind of cuddly, twinkly-eyed old judge. And when I sort of made a slight allusion to this publicly, I was contacted directly by a number of lawyers and barristers who'd worked with him in the past and said, no, this guy's no pushover. He's got a very, very sharp mind, and he will get to the bottom of this if anyone can. Yep. What I expect will happen is that he will censure a number of people by name in his report. Their public reputations will be trashed. They will never work in public life again, but they will retire on very, very large pots of money that they've accumulated over the years, and they will never go anywhere near a criminal court. I would be amazed if we ever were to see any individual being, well, any senior individual being prosecuted for the crime of, say, perverting the course of justice, because that's just not how this system works. Our society, if you look back at all the scandals that have happened, from the infected blood scandal to Hillsborough, to the banking crisis, to the Windrush scandal, has anyone gone to prison for any of this? You may have had a couple of bankers over the banking crisis.
You get a health and safety prosecution for Hillsborough. I think,
but it didn't. Well, so a club was fined, but no individual.
Endorsing what you're saying, in the banking crisis, you had a couple of LIBOR brokers, but the banks got away with it. That's the reality. Well, it has been the reality. But I think the point that I would want to make, and I think you would absolutely endorse, is that the police need to do their job properly here. They've got tons of evidence, potentially tons of evidence. And maybe this might be the one occasion, given the size of the miscarriage, that people will be brought to justice.
Well, I think, health and safety is obviously, when that came in and company directors were made criminally responsible for lack of proactively making safe their workplaces, it focused their minds like nothing else. There is currently no law in place which would focus the mind of a director of a company into making the right decision, because if they didn't make the right decision, they could end up in a dock themselves. I know Andy Burnham has been campaigning for a Hillsborough law, which I think would go some way towards doing that, that if a decision were made in bad faith to protect the interests of the shareholders or the company itself, rather than to do the right thing, then that would be a criminal offence. I have no idea how you'd structure a law like that whether that's even feasible, but that is what you need. Until it is easier to do the right thing for the public good and for the victims involved, people will always choose the path of least resistance. Yeah. And if the path of least resistance means, you know, keeping your head down, not doing anything which could disrupt the possible future prospects of the organization that you work for, that's what most people will do. Mm. So I don't know whether people can be held to account under the current system that we've got with this scandal, which Nazir, is why I think people are advocating for a Hillsborough law.
Nazir, we talk about it every week, and I have to say my blood is boiling listening to this. I've obviously followed it, and we've talked about it, and I've followed your amazing work, Nick. And I think you've articulated it in an incredibly simple, clear way today, and thank you for that. But Nazir, I'm fuming.
Yeah, well, you know, there were occasions during the last 45 minutes, Nick, where I wanted to get up and get my torch and go down Whitehall and confront them. It's when good people don't do anything that bad people get away with whatever they get away with. And I think the point that you've made extremely articulately and eloquently is that something has to change here. And the duty of candor, which is the Hillsborough law, I think is one way of doing it. It's nothing new in other parts of the world, where if you are, you know, you're required to tell the truth. And if you don't tell the truth, that in itself is a criminal offense, you know? And it sort of encourages people to do so. And, you know, I've seen it in America, Nick, where, you know, you have, even if you can't prosecute them for whatever it is, whatever crime they may have committed, the fact that they lied to a prosecutor or lied to a police officer in itself was a crime.
Well, let me give you one example, because I keep coming back to it. Paula Vennell's evidence in person before the Bayes Select Committee hearing, where she said, to date, no miscarriages of justice have been surfaced. Now, Professor Richard Moorhead, the Professor of Legal Ethics at the University of Exeter, described that statement as palpably false. But what he said was that we don't know whether she knew it was palpably false or whether the people giving her that information knew it was palpably false and she took it in good faith. And this is the problem with any kind of prosecution of individuals working within organisations. The who knew what when is so difficult to pin down. And I'm quite certain that Paula Vennells will tell you, because she told me and her lawyers told me while I was putting together the book, that she acted in good faith at all times.
Yeah. I think, strangely, the digital world might help us now in a way that previously it didn't. You know, emails and email trails and WhatsApp messages and all of that kind of stuff. So there might now in the future be more opportunities for being able to prove who knew what, rather than simply relying upon it was, you know, I was just doing my job. It's almost like a Nazi defense, isn't it? I was just following orders.
One thing I have learned is that the post office as an organization, much like News International during the phone hacking crisis, denied everything until they were forced to confront the truth by actual documentation. And then they would allow whatever truth that document exposed, yeah, but deny everything else until the next document came
out. I always say, you know, there's a morality to what we do in life, and there's an honesty, and, you know, all of us. You know, I know you well enough, Nick, and obviously Nazir very well. You know, we all have real morality in terms of how we work. We have honesty. It's an integrity in terms of what we do. But those people at the post office who have had knowledge and led to those prosecutions, I tell you what, I'm disgusted in them. And I hope they have trouble sleeping. And I hope this weighs as a millstone around their neck for the rest of their life. Nick, what is the next stage now? Give us a timeline.
Well, Sir Wayne Williams was initially due to report in autumn this year, and no one thought that was feasible. And recently, even he admitted that that was not feasible. We've got the next, after the human impact phases of the statutory inquiry conclude, we've got 8 more phases of the inquiry. It has a sort of open-ended timetable. He wants to start phase 3 in September. If we're going to go at 2 phases per judicial term, I can't see him reporting before the end of next year, although I think the intention is to do so before then. So by that stage, we will have named individuals who will be either censured or exonerated by Sir Wynne Williams. We've got the compensation schemes, which are dragging on far beyond what they should do. There are 3 groups of compensations schemes, and the group that blew everything open in the High Court and were forced to settle into a binding agreement to receive compensation far less than they deserved, are still hoping to hear from the government that that will either be reopened or simply they will be qualifying for ex gratia payments directly from the government. But the government has put aside £1 billion in compensation to deal with the fallout from this scandal. It has written down the value of the post office network to zero in its recent annual report. And the post office, without this huge amount of financial intervention, which is coming directly from the taxpayer, mm-hmm. would be insolvent. So yeah. that is the effect of this scandal. And I think the compensation needs to be resolved immediately. And then come next year, we should start to see some names named. Now, whether that then becomes of interest to the Director of Public Prosecutions, I don't know.
Nick, tell us, you've got a book.
Yeah, the book's called The Great Post Office Scandal. It is both, I hope, a definitive guide as to what's been going on over the last 20 years, but also I've written it as what I like to call a factual thriller. So it's not a compendium that you need as a reference book. It is more a story with a narrative in it, which explains everything that happened and introduces you to some of the people who suffered the most imaginable horrors. And I'm very grateful to them for allowing me to tell their story.
Is there a documentary? Is there a movie?
There will be a panorama at the end of April, which will be the third in the trilogy after the 2015 and 2020 episodes. And I'm also a consultant on an ITV drama, which I hope will be broadcast next year, which is going to be one of their big four-part high-profile attempts at trying to sort of explain dramatically what has happened over the last 20 years. So it will continue to get bigger and bigger, this story. I think the huge amount of public interest at the start of the public inquiry surprised even me, and the media interest on that, and the fact that the broadsheet newspapers have woken up to this only suggests to me that we're going to have more journalists, more people like your good selves, looking and scrutinizing at what happened, and more information will come to light that will continue to shock us. Because almost every 4 or 5 weeks, I come across another document or another statement or another event which leaves my jaw on the floor. And I think there's more of that to come.
Nick, you're very humble. And I know when I exposed Savile, you know, that was only possible because of the victims coming forward and having their voice. And I always say, you know, I was a vehicle for that exposure. You know, if it hadn't been for the victims, it would never have been possible. And it's exactly the same for the post office. It's the strength of those individual campaigners, the victims, the families, those people who allowed you to tell their story and for you to be able to put it into public domain. And for that, I think, you know, investigative journalism is at times very, very difficult to do. And it's certainly not at the forefront of most broadcasters or newspapers' agendas. So well done. And I know that through the course of this, you know, you've done an awful lot of it yourself, you know, your finances and aspects of that. So I pay testament to you. And I know, Nazir, when we've talked about it, I mean, I think this whole area of investigative journalism, taking that mantle on and running with it, is just so important.
So valuable. In a democracy, you need it. You need people like Nick to virtually give up your own life in order to amplify the voices of those who otherwise wouldn't be heard. I'm really grateful to you, Nick, for what you've done.
Well, I'm very grateful to you for having me on the podcast. Thank you very much for the kind words. But I would just echo what you said, Mark. It's, you know, I'm just doing my job. There are a lot of very brave people who risked everything to come forward and to provide me with documents and tell me their stories. And they are the heroes of this.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Fear or Favour. If you want to learn more, do buy Nick's book. It's available on Amazon, or get in contact via Twitter or our website, and any emails we will pass on to Nick. Thanks again for listening. Look after yourself. Do tell all your friends about us and subscribe. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Do please tell your true crime friends, and it's important that you subscribe to our channel. If you've got any thoughts or you just simply want to get in touch, you can do so via our Twitter page, Fear or Favour, or go to our website, www.fearorfavour.com. The series is edited by Martin Kays, the music by Dylan Epega. Fear or Favour is an original true crime podcast in association with Audioboom.